Welcome to No Substitutions Please, a show about food and the things people do to it. I'm Noah, Thick and Chewy McKinnon.
And I'm Louisa, Toffee Undertones Heron.
And what food are we talking about this week?
This week we have a real classic. I'm sure everyone will be familiar with it. This is the chocolate chip cookie. I felt there like I needed to build it up, like it would be a surprise when it got revealed, but if you're listening to the episode, you already know it because it's the title. So here we are, chocolate chip cookies.
That's how we draw them in. Eventually, we just change the titles to be cryptic.
That's right. And then if you write in with the true title, because you've listened to the episode, on a self-addressed sealed envelope, you might win a prize.
Of absolutely nothing.
Well, we don't have an address that they can send things to, so it's fine.
Yeah, so this is moot anyway. What is to you a chocolate chip cookie? What is the sine qua non of a chocolate chip cookie?
I think, clearly, it has to have chocolate chips or chunks. I'm fine.
Controversial. Right off the bat.
I think it must have a dough that has a strong brown sugar taste, a brown sugar forward kind of dough. It can be crispy or chewy, but it must taste like brown sugar.
Because you want those toffee undertones.
That's right. They're so important.
I think that is a pretty good summation of the basic elements of the chocolate chip cookie. Because you've got everything from the thicker and chewier kind, soft, melt in your mouth kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the Tate's cookies, which every single time I try to eat one, I feel like I'm about to crack a tooth.
Yes, they maybe take the toffee undertones a little too far into the realm of toffee when they're actually quite crunchy.
Yes. I don't dislike the taste.
Yeah, me either.
They have very, or at least they used to. I haven't had them in a few years, and recent experience with other brands of cookies shows that things have gone very much downhill in that regard.
Oh, it's a shame.
So if Tate's has also gotten worse, that would be terrible. But even though I am not, generally speaking, a texture eater, there is something about that thin and crispy. It's too waferish. It's yes. Too much like a cracker.
Too insubstantial for a cookie.
Yes. Whereas, especially for like a chocolate chip cookie, you want that decadence. You want that satisfaction.
Yes.
And you will.
This cookie is everywhere you want to be.
Mm-hmm. And you've noticed that we've left out Chips Ahoy because.
You know, I don't mind Chips Ahoy that much. As a crunchy chocolate chip cookie, I think they're okay.
As a kid, I really liked them. Like, perhaps too much. I recently, actually, a couple years ago, bought a pack just to see if they were how I remember. And maybe I just got a bad batch. Maybe it was old. It was mostly sawdust. They just disintegrated, and not in a good way. It wasn't molten or liquid chocolate. It wasn't soft. It was just dusty.
They're very dry. That's true, yeah. You really have to be wanting to eat that cookie to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's the main problem with those. I don't think either of us is particularly dead set against, you know, major brand product if it's fine, but that is one example where definitely I felt I might actually have outgrown this. This might be something, I put away this childish thing.
Yes, I feel that way about, they don't even sell them anymore, I don't think, but McDonald's used to have, as part of their kids' meal, a tiny little bag of chocolate chip cookies that were about the size of a quarter.
Yes, the silver dollar ones.
Yeah, they basically tasted like nothing. As a kid, I remember picking out the chocolate chips to eat those separately. They did not taste like chocolate. They didn't taste like anything. And I think I've outgrown that cookie.
Woof. Very, that does seem very McDonald's-ish in terms of product. I do want to give a shout out, and I think this is not the last time I'll be mentioning them, but one kind of chocolate chip cookie that we didn't mention very often, or didn't mention in our current discussion, the Craggy chocolate chip cookie, which some people do specifically set out to make. You know, it has a lot of peaks and valleys, very mm-hmm. three-dimensional in that regard. I suppose they all are, but this one kind of pushes that aspect of it.
I think of that as like a coffee shop or a bakery mm-hmm. chocolate chip cookie where it's going to be huge. It's going to be like 6 inches across. You're going to spend quite a bit of money on it, but it's going to be like everything you could want in a chocolate yes. chip cookie. A mountain and of a cookie.
Up here, it's particularly popular to have them with submarine sandwiches.
Oh, okay.
And it does make a really nice accompaniment. You know, you have your
yes.
you have your medium cold cuts or whatever. You have your sandwich. You have your chips. You have your soda, and then you have that cookie mm-hmm. at the end. And it's it does provide a very nice little finishing touch to your lunch.
We have that down here too a lot at the hoagie shops. This is our regional differences here, submarines and hoagies. But they will always be wrapped up in cling film. So they have that, like, cling film taste to them when you unwrap them, which is very nostalgic to me, even though I don't particularly like it.
And, you know, I didn't really grow up with that. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm just not noticing it because of that difference. But that, I can definitely understand the specific flavor of getting a food yes. from a specific establishment. That recreation of the experience. I mean, smell and taste are the senses most linked to memory for a reason. Mm-hmm. Do we think we've exhausted talking about what the food is? Is there anything left?
I think we're good. I think we should get into the comments here. And we've combed the internet, the recipe comment sections for several different recipes. And here's what we found people are saying about chocolate chip cookies. This comment gets into one of my pet peeves. Here we go.
Pet peeve.
Hi there. Yeah, that's right. Hi there, they say. Would it be possible I can cut down both of the sugar due to my family can't really take too sweet? But we love soft and chewy inside, crispy edges. Thanks. No one has replied to this comment. No one has helped this person out.
I think my favorite part about you talking about these is mm-hmm. that you always mention whether anybody has replied or liked the comment. Something that I cannot lie, I have never noticed and pay no attention to.
That's totally reasonable. Even reading the comments at all is a fool's errand. They're always true. Frustrating. But sometimes someone says something and someone else is like, oh, here's what you need to do, and it solves their problem. But there's no solving this person's problem, because the problem is they see how much sugar is in the recipe and they don't like it. They don't like that number, so they want a different number to get the same result. And you can't do that. And so that drives me crazy, because you see that in any type of dessert. And it's never people who have allergies or who, say, have diabetes who are asking for reasons to reduce it, the sugar. It's always people who just don't like that number. And that's what gets me.
This gets at something, because we're talking here about a baked good, right? Mm-hmm. This gets at something. This is a difference between baking and cooking.
Yes.
So I'll briefly sort of go into this. I have a coworker, had a coworker, he is no longer at the same workplace, who
condolences.
Was say that again?
I said condolences.
Yeah. Well, I honestly meant, because here's the deal. Mm-hmm. Incredible baker. He was a chemist by trade, and he used to mm-hmm. say, you know, baking is applied chemistry. And the first time he said that, and I know that I knew that in some part of my brain, but until he pointed it out that it's basically you just, you know, apply the laws of nature to cause, and I know that you do this in cooking as well, but the thing with baking is that once it goes in the oven, generally speaking, it is no longer within your control until you turn the switch off. Like, there's not yes. a whole lot you can do.
Exactly.
So it is up to the laws of nature to make whatever you put in there, those ingredients that you put in there, result in something that is tasty and worth eating. And he was incredible yes. at it. He would make these, three-tier cakes, the best red velvet cake I've ever had. I know he was also an excellent cook, separately from that. He once told me about making a 24-hour, like it took a whole day for him to do this, make a steak sauce because he was having his parents mm-hmm. over for dinner. Very much a family man in that sense of the word. And he was reducing all these beef bones and whatnot, bottles of red wine, I mean, heads of garlic, this whole thing. Sounded incredible.
Sounds so good. Mm.
He was just a fantastic kitchen man. And
a real kitchen man, like they say.
Yes, that expression that you hear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the reasons that that phrase, baking is applied chemistry, so struck me is because there are certain things in chemistry that are axiomatic. That's mm-hmm. just how it works. You can't change that.
Yep.
And this isn't the last time we're going to see this, but sugar is not just sweet powder.
Yes, that's the thing. The things this person wants, soft and chewy inside, crispy edges, both of those are, in this recipe, likely due to the sugar. Because sugar is hydrophilic, it helps keep water in something, it helps keep it chewy. And where it melts and rehardens at the edge of a baked good, just particularly a cookie, that's what makes it crispy. So it's doing all of this work, and they want this work, but they don't want the sugar. And you just can't have that. Sorry.
Yes. It's very much, it's, you want to have your cookie and eat it and have it be healthier.
Yeah, exactly. You want it to be a salad while it's being a cookie. And you can't. You can't have that.
That's the spectrum of all foods right there. Salad on one end, cookie on the other. Everything can be graphed as to which percentage it is.
That's right. That should be the true angel's food versus devil's food. Rather than them both being cakes.
Yes. Okay, along the same themes, I've got one here. This comment says, just made these and will be baking them tomorrow. So you didn't make them.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask about an issue I had. Followed the recipe to a T. Now, if you see this in a comment, there's one thing you immediately know, and that is that they did not do that.
Yeah.
Because
that
the
never
expression
is followed by actually following it to a T. Yes.
Yes. I think the expression followed to a T, a lot of people have decided that it means through common usage, rather, not proper usage, have decided that it means, you know, gave it a chance.
Yeah.
Because
pretty much the same.
The very next phrase is with one exception. So
here
so
we go.
Gonna follow it to a T. Okay, fine.
This is the start of the horror story. This is where it enters the Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. I replaced the brown sugar with honey and reduced it from 140 grams to 100 grams. Now, mind you, everything else was weighted, sifted, measured, and mixed, as the recipe says. Waiter, sifter, measurer, mix. My favorite John le Carré novel.
Uh-huh.
But when it came to the final mix, I had to add a lot of flour because it was extremely runny. Probably close to 6 tablespoons at least. Any idea what might have gone wrong? Now, I do want to say, before I continue with this, I commend this person on realizing, you know what? This probably isn't what this batter should look like. Because as we shall soon see, not everybody makes that realization.
Very true.
But then, was my butter high in liquids to begin with? Was it not cool enough? Let harden next time. Did I not beat the eggs enough? Just the difference in the flour itself? I'm not in the U.S. No, let me tell you what you did wrong. You replaced brown sugar, a solid ingredient that famously comes in, and you've made fun of me for saying this before, crumbs.
Yeah, those little sugar crumbs.
Those little sugar crumbs. You replace that with a liquid ingredient, honey. And I will admit, I am no expert on substituting ingredients. I do not know if this is supposed to be the optimal ratio of brown sugar to honey. I don't know if there's somewhere where it says, yeah, you just, you know, for every 140 grams of brown sugar, you put 100 grams of honey, which seems like the weirdest comparison chart in the universe, but there you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are shocked that your batter is runny. Imagine that.
I love that they go immediately to wondering if their butter, which I'm sure was just commercially available butter, if it was too high in liquids somehow and they didn't notice, like, if that could be the problem, rather than thinking, oh, I dumped a bunch of liquid into this recipe at a point where there shouldn't have been any liquid because it was supposed to be sugar. But no, they didn't get to that conclusion.
It's particularly notable because one of the big things in baking, right, is the division between the wet and the dry ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You can't do that. You just can't do that. That's not how that works. You replaced a dry with a wet. And chances are pretty good that if you're asking these questions, if any of these are what you think the culprit is, pretty good shot that you also didn't mix it correctly.
Yes, that's probably also true.
Now, here's the thing, right? I don't want to, without taking away from the fact that this was a supremely outlandish way to handle this problem, I suppose there is perhaps a world where these cookies come out okay, but I'm going to go ahead and guess that they didn't, and that this actually came out looking a lot more like bread.
Yes. When you just decide, oh, this batter is too loose, I'll just add more flour. That's almost never a good idea.
No. Especially not because the batter is done. You've created it.
Yeah.
You'd be better off probably at that point, honestly, just baking a cookie cake.
Yeah, really. Just put it in a cast iron skillet and be done with it.
Ooh.
That does sound good, right?
It does. A
scoop of ice cream on top.
Anyway,
moving on from that person, we found a new person with a new set of problems. This... There's so many.
Too many
There's
people, too many
number.
Problems.
Mm-hmm.
Land of confusion, etc.
Too many bakers making too many... Yes.
This is about to become very accurate to what you're about to read.
This person is doing something that I live out in nightmares sometimes, legitimately. I have nightmares where this sort of thing happens to me, but they are doing it to themselves in real life on purpose. Here's the comment. Approximately how many cookies does this recipe produce? I need to know by how much to double or triple the recipe. I need to make 240 cookies.
That's too many cookies.
That is. A friend has asked me to bake cookies for her wedding instead of a cake, and if I'm going to bake cookies, I'm going to wow them and do it right with your recipe, which I've read and reread the science breakdown of at least 3 times. So, thank you for that. I'm planning on browning the butter tonight to let it cool and set in advance, but I just don't know how much I will need. Thanks! Also relevant that no one has ever replied to this comment in 6 years since it was posted, because this person is about to ruin someone's wedding tomorrow, and they don't seem to realize that. The fact that they are starting a recipe they've never tried before, and they don't know how to scale it up correctly, and they're browning the butter tonight to make these cookies tomorrow, is nerve-wracking to me.
Yes, I have a lot of issues here. The first one being, it would be a very strange recipe that doesn't tell you how many cookies it makes.
Yes, they always do. At the top, they always say how many cookies a cookie recipe will make.
I will say, not that I want to pick fights right out the gate with any particular recipe sites, I will say there are a number of places that will chicken out and tell you serves 4 or serves 6.
Yes.
And not tell you that it's a chocolate chip cookie. You're going to need to narrow that down.
Yes.
Because absolutely. What somebody else considers a serving of chocolate chip cookies, I'm going to guarantee you right now, you're going to need to at least double that for me.
Yes.
So there's that. That's one problem. The second one, and I do agree with you that this is a living hell. Just wondering
really
what this
is.
Person's life is like. I will say, there are circumstances where maybe this isn't so bad. Like, maybe it's not 240 people. Maybe it's 20 people, and you're giving them a dozen cookies to take home as a souvenir or something like that. In that case, I can understand maybe taking it a little bit easier if everybody who's going to be there is somebody that you know. You know, friends who are going to have a reason to maybe, let it slide that you made it the night yeah. before.
The humble chocolate chip cookie instead of some cake. Yes.
Yes. I could understand that. Mm-hmm. But contextless. This, I think I can feel my heart rate rising as I get mm-hmm. as we get deeper into this comment.
I can't imagine even serving food at a dinner party for four people without trying the recipe ahead of time. So the thought of making a recipe you've never made before for a wedding is insane to me.
I'm not going to lie to you. Not only can I imagine doing that, I have done that.
Oh no!
Not the cookies, the dinner party one I have done.
You're part of the problem.
Yes. But that's why I say, like, I can see circumstances where maybe this isn't so bad. But for 240 cookies, I mean, chocolate chip cookies, if you're cooking them in batches, you're going to need, like, five cooling racks. You're going to need yeah. all of this counter space just to get them out on time. And yeah. with a relatively even cook, this is the tightrope you are walking. this is the culinary equivalent of being Kurt Wallenda. Like, it's not this is not easy. This is double yeah, black diamond baking here.
Yes, it really is, especially with a baked good. I kind of understand why they're doing it last minute, because baked goods simply don't last that long when mm-hmm. they're not full of preservatives. So it's always tough to cater food for something important. That's yes. why it's handled professionally a lot of the time. But, oh man, just the thought of never having tried the recipe even for yourself before making it for a wedding, I don't understand.
Yes, I think we definitely agree on that.
Oh boy.
Alrighty. I've got another one here, and a lot of these are understandable, and I get why the person is saying what they're saying. Mm-hmm. This one legitimately made me angry.
Alright.
This is from a different recipe. Mm-hmm. And it says, I might try... Oh, and I should note, this person was pandemic baking.
Uh-huh. Very important.
Yes. You've mentioned before when we've talked about comments that typically people will tell you that. Mm-hmm. If they were, but this is from May 2020, so definitely well into the pandemic baking zone. I might try these, they say, but I am put off by the weight measurements instead of volume. Typically, Europeans use the weight measurements, which mm-hmm. would then be listed in metric units, not ounces. Cool metric system own, sibling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
really. Those of us who bake and measure in ounces usually also measure by volume rather than weight.
That doesn't make any sense.
Except for items easily measured by weight, i.e. Butter, chocolate chips. Mm-hmm. Two periods followed by a space. Can't say I've seen that very often. I've seen a period followed by two spaces. Two periods followed by a space is new. Mm-hmm. Greatest closing line I think I've seen mm-hmm. in any of these. Mm-hmm. This just seemed pretentious.
So this person says they don't like that the recipe is giving you the weights of things instead of the volume. Which most people do like, actually, because it's much easier to measure things by a scale, and once you start baking regularly, most people do switch to weight measurements because it is easier. They don't like that. They want it to be volume, and they have this weird idea that it's the Europeans' fault somehow that this is happening to them.
I normally do not get to swear on anything that I record.
Uh-huh.
So this is an unbelievably exciting moment for me, is what I'm saying uh-huh. right now. But like...
Here we go.
Shut the fuck up, gringo!
Oh, it's this particular... I feel comfortable saying they're an American because it's this particular feeling that things are pretentiously European, and that's like creeping into your consciousness and you hate the idea of it.
And specifically that metric measurements, which are more accurate, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sorry, but grams are going to be better than ounces. Yes. They're more granular, nailed it.
Yes, very good.
Measurement.
And you don't have to remember, you know, 16 ounces to a pound. It's not on the base 10 system. It's all very complicated.
You don't have to use imperial. The European term avoirdupois.
Exactly.
If you don't want to. It's...
Mm-hmm. We should change that to freedom ounces. So there it is, yeah. You don't have to use European terms.
That probably is how you could get Americans to adopt. Well, technically the country has already adopted the metric system, but you could probably actually get Americans to do that if you started referring to like Celsius as like the freedom temperature or something like that. I grew up using... Now, weight measurements is one where
here
I think...
Here he goes.
What's that now?
I said, here he goes.
I grew up using... I think for weight measurements, it was pretty much always ounces and pounds. But I never baked, as in Spanish. But in Puerto Rico, we'll use, you know, miles per gallon, but the gas is sold by liter.
Yes, I've heard that.
Or we'll use miles per hour for speed, but the roads are marked by kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've my favorite one...
Similar problems in Canada.
Fahrenheit. Is the weather temperature. But if you have a fever, it's measured in Celsius.
That one's confusing to me, because Fahrenheit is like the human body scale, really.
Yeah.
And Celsius is the water scale.
So,
okay.
Do you know how long it took me to figure out that fevers were when your body gets hot? Because when you have a fever, you typically get... You might get that, but as you're starting to break it, you start to feel cold, right? As your body starts to shed all of that... Uh-huh. And my parents would go, well, he has a 37 fever. And I'm like, I'm 37 degrees on the inside? What's happening right now? And finally, when I was officially taught about the centigrade scale, is when I understood what was happening. So
that makes sense. So it took you a long time to learn the...
So as somebody with...
The... Sorry, I'm getting a glitch in our recording. So it took you a long time to learn the Foreigner song Hot Blooded and how that worked into, Boy, you should see Noah's face right now. He's very disappointed in me.
Mm-hmm. I am. I'm not even going to disagree with that. But what I will say is that I think you are absolutely right. Not that I thought there was ever any question of this person being
American. I like to hear that.
American.
I don't care what else you have to say. Yep, I'm right. Go on.
But I love in particular the idea that if the inaccuracy, if the variance, if the, frankly, just lack of, if you're a baker, you want things to be as down to the, you know, milligram as possible. Mm-hmm. You want everything to be as exact as possible so that you can get the same results, because baking in that way is much less forgiving than cooking. There aren't 156 different ways to achieve the same thing. Once you put something in the oven, the only variable is whether your oven is up to par. There's nothing else you can do. And this kind of defensiveness about the idea that somebody might want something to be more accurate, that you might want to learn a measurement system that helps you make better food. That's the amazing part. The refusal... to be better at the thing you are doing. That's what gets my goat here.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know from this comment, trying to be better at doing something is just pretentious. So
that's right. I forgot. My bad.
Oh, boy. Let's see. I have another comment that I would love to read for you, folks. Here's someone who enjoyed the recipe for a change. They say, loved these. Husband must have gone and lost his damn mind saying they were just okay. I made a double batch and only baked 6. It's 2 weeks later. I'm baking 6 more from the freezer. Anxious to see what he thinks today. I love that they're running a social experiment on their husband, first of all. I love that very much.
That's great. Yeah. Replacing his coffee with Folgers crystals. Seeing if he notices.
Yes. And clearly they're trying to court the comment section by being sassy enough that you're like, ah, oh, this person's fun. I love it. But they do have a really good point, which is freezing dough balls from when you're making cookies and then just baking them from the freezer. Oh, that I do that all the time because I live alone. So to just get a few cookies at a time that are fresh baked, that's really the best thing to do.
The second best thing to do is to get the fresh baked cookies and then serve them to your husband while glaring at him over your crossed arms.
Yeah, what do you think of that this time? Earl, I can't think of a name, so it's fine. It doesn't matter.
You're good. I do like that you went right to like Reba McEntire there.
Yeah, I'm like, what's a terrible husband name? Earl. Mm-hmm. The Dixie Chicks, though.
Yeah, the Dixie Chicks, Reba McEntire, and the movie Waitress.
Oh, yes, you're right.
That was my introduction to Jeremy Sisto.
Yeah, I first saw him on 6 Feet Under, also playing a creep, so there's that.
Imagine that. And then he was a detective on Law & Order. Wild.
Yes.
All right. Ooh. I've got one more.
Oh, yes, and it's back actually, to the subject of chocolate chip
cookies. It's actually kind of in the same vein as the last one, but it's a slightly different tack on it. And I'm actually not sure if this one made me angrier than the... No, the last one definitely made me angrier. As soon as I said it, I knew. But, here we go. Despite being a very experienced baker, weighing my ingredients, these were a flop. They were not thick and a bit too sweet for my taste. There are so many chocolate chip cookie recipes out there, and I could have easily made something else. Do not understand the rave reviews. Now, I do have to make one note, which is that I know what recipe this is from. That will not always be the case, but I do know what recipe this is from. I have made this recipe half a dozen times, maybe eight or nine at this point, because I've made double batches quite often. I have literally never had a bad result with this recipe.
Uh-huh.
I've had middling ones if I've forgotten to do something correctly or if I messed up an order, or a couple of times, I think once I set the oven to a wrong temperature. But even then, they've been okay. They have not been a flop. I will say that.
Yeah, I don't really understand all their anger. They could easily have made something else. Well, but you tried this recipe. Like, that's life. You have to pick one and try it and see what you think. And then they don't understand the rave reviews. Well, sometimes people say that, and I think they mean everyone else is wrong and I'm right. But if so many other people tried to make something and enjoyed it, there's something there, even if it's not your thing.
I actually blame the internet on this one. I blame Yelp culture on this one, because there is an incentive for anything that you rate or review. And now, I don't know how this particular site works. It is possible that public reviews aren't part, or public ratings aren't part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an incentive to make sure that anything gets an over fair share of good reviews, right? This is a problem we have with everything from Amazon to Marvel movies to, you know, restaurants where the owner gets relatives and friends and so on. A thousand examples of this stuff. And so I can get why somebody might think, well, some of this stuff has got to be fake. But what I'm also going to presume is that there are a ton of comments that say, I've made this recipe a bunch of times and it's always come out great, or something like that.
This is, we're not really sourcing these, but this I know is from a site that is a pay to see the recipe site. And that really changes the tone of the comments, I feel like. You don't see a lot of effusive nonsense comments on this website. People are quite truthful, I find. So if they're used to using this site, I also don't understand why they,
I wonder if that changes the mechanic somewhat, because if you've, as we know, particularly in this country, if you've paid money for something, you expect to always be the customer, and the customer is always right. And this person is clearly mad in the way that somebody who, you know, looked up, I don't know, best seafood restaurants under $30 or something like that, and then got mad that their fish was a bit briny.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit, it smacks a little bit of unearned anger, or of maybe unexamined anger.
You feel entitled to more if you're paying something. Mm-hmm. I definitely understand that. Mm-hmm.
But again, I do think that part of the source for my annoyance here is that, again, I've made these, and they come out delightfully thick every time. And
yes,
if they were too sweet, you used the wrong chips.
Yes. That's always my go-to. If I don't like a chocolate chip cookie recipe, I'm like, well, I'll just put in, you know, bittersweet chips instead of semi-sweet and see how I like that. Works out fine.
I'm usually a semi-sweet man. Chocolate chip cookies are one of the rare things that I am okay eating fairly dark chocolate in. Just because with all of that brown sugar, with all the butter, especially if they've browned the butter ahead of time, before melting it in there. If you've got the salt, if you've got the vanilla extract, there is a lot of stuff going on there that helps cut that, and it makes the bitterness of a darker chocolate almost a treat.
Yes, it really enhances it. Agreed.
And from a metagame point of view, it makes you able to eat more of it because you're not quite as... it's not as cloying, would be the term.
Yes. Yes, very true. Which leads us nicely into what we like to talk about after the comments, which is what variants are good.
The things we do to the food.
Yeah, to change up a recipe. As you said, chips. I love to add, like, say, semi-sweet and peanut butter chips. I love that in chocolate chip cookie.
That's wonderful.
Caramel chips.
That would also be great. I haven't tried this one yet. I do want to make a dark or semi-sweet and white chocolate chip cookie. Partly because there is a Pepperidge Farm one that's kind of like that, and it has gone absolutely downhill. They stopped using any butter in the cookies, and it's very obvious. Real tragedy. Do you remember when Pepperidge Farm used to use butter? Guess what? Pepperidge Farm doesn't remember.
That's especially a shame, because I know Pepperidge Farm was started as a company that would use ingredients that weren't allergens. I think the founder's son had a whole bunch of allergies back when people didn't really make things for people with allergies, and her thing was it has to be like whole ingredients and no extra artificial colors or flavors, but that's kind of all gone out the window in that company, unfortunately.
They're still wrapping stuff twice, though. That's the part I don't understand.
Yes, they are.
I think they heard the Mitch Hedberg joke and they're like, well, that's it. We're going to have to do this for the rest of the time. Doesn't matter how much extra money we're spending on packaging.
Yep.
But at any rate, so that's one of them. The other one that I tried, and I did actually try this one, because the white chocolate chips, and I want real white chocolate chips for this, not the palm oil and sugar and milk solids and vanilla extract ones. But I think a real, if you like chop the baking bar down, right?
Yes.
You could get these really nice chunks of a very creamy cacao buttery flavor that would both contrast well with the toffee-like cookie and with a darker chocolate. I've had that in ice cream. I've had that in fondue, that flavor contrast. I think in a cookie, especially if you're expecting it to be just a regular old chocolate chip cookie and you get this contrast instead, I think that's a real force multiplier is the term I would use.
Agreed.
Let me ask you this. How do you feel about sea salt on a chocolate chip cookie?
I love that, especially if you do use, say, semi-sweet chocolate or even milk chocolate. So you're adding more sweetness in the form of chips. So it's going to be a very sweet cookie. If you're having that, but you sprinkle some flaky sea salt on top, that is just a wonderful contrast, and I love that very much.
I tried to do it a few weeks ago, near the beginning of July, with some Malden crystals that I have, and I will say, my mistake, I crushed the crystals a little bit too fine, because some of them were, ridiculous. They looked like an entire, cube kind of salt.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get them to be
smaller. The big chunks.
Yes. So I tried to crush them a little bit smaller and maybe got too overzealous. But because I do brown the butter when I make these cookies, you had the saltiness of the brown butter, that little bit of Maillard reaction that gets in there.
Yes, that savoriness, yeah.
Yes. So you had that, you had the cookie, and then at the very end, a much sharper saltiness that also cuts through all of the extra sweetness.
Yes.
In fact, if this lady is so mad about the cookies being a bit too sweet, that would be my first suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Sprinkle some salt on there. Throw a little salt on there. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. nuts in chocolate chip cookies. I'm not a fan just because I really don't like nuts in baked goods very much on a personal level. But I understand that, you know, pecans or walnuts are traditional. How do you feel about those?
I've actually never had one with pecans. I don't think I would mind it, especially if the pecans were toasted ahead of time and added a little bit, especially if they were toasted in like a butter pecan. I think that that might be really nice. Walnuts, I have had. We talked about those sub shop cookies. And it's pretty common to get that. And do you know, in a craggy chocolate chip cookie like that, I don't mind it. It blends pretty well with everything. I wouldn't put them in mine because the texture that I aim for is very soft. It has crisp at the edges, but it is a pretty soft texture at the center. And I feel like pieces of walnut are going to ruin that evenness, that consistency in both senses of the word. And that I'm not too excited about.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I would leave those out in that case. But, you know, if that's what's available, I'll eat it. I'm not gonna hate it. I know that ahead of time.
And there's some good combinations, you know, with different types of nuts, different types of chocolates. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone. I think that's all that we have to talk about for chocolate chip cookies this time. If you've enjoyed our show, please tell your friends about it.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, we're on Twitter at NoSubsPlease, on Mastodon at NoSubsPlease as Mastodon.online. And if you should see any outlandish or funny or infuriating recipe comments, send them our way at nosubstitutionsplis, that's PLS, sorry, every other permutation was taken, at gmail.com.
Well, until next time, we have been No Substitutions Please, and like the best cooks, we would like to leave you wanting more.